Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Till it happens to you, you don't know how I feel. How I feel. How I feel.
The artist is Lady Gaga. The song is Till It Happens to You, an anthem about rape, rape culture, and violence against women, which are the subjects of our first edition of Route 51 for the year 2017. I'm Glenn Moberg. Rape culture is defined by the Women's Center at Marshall University as an environment in which rape is prevalent and in which sexual violence against women is normalized and excused in the media and popular culture. Today we're going to discuss if rape culture exists and if it's a serious problem in North Central Wisconsin. We'll look at some of the questionable messages our young people get from the media, from music, from role models, and even from top public officials who should know better. And we'll look at how the normalization of sexual assault can hurt real people, including our friends, families, and neighbors. Our guests today are Jane Graham Jennings, the Executive Director of the Women's Community of Wausau, which provides shelter and assistance to the victims of sexual assault and domestic violence, and Paul Clark. He's a faculty member of North Central Technical College's School of Public Safety. Clark is a former deputy police chief, detective sergeant, and patrol officer who investigated his first sexual assault case 26 years ago. We'd like to hear from you. Tell us what you think of today's subject, and if you know someone who's been the victim of sexual assault or domestic violence, or who's been helped by the women's community, we especially want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That number again is 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Jane and Paul, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We got a pretty horrific case that's in the news today. According to police, a 54-year-old man shocked a woman with a homemade stun gun, sexually assaulted her, and forced her into a wooden box. The woman was going to see his granddaughter. She was lured into the basement. She was able to hide a nail in her shirt sleeve during the attack, which she used as a tool to get out of the box and escape. So, Paul, this stuff happens in North Central Wisconsin.
Unfortunately, yes, it does.
Jane, the women's community provides a refuge for victims. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, there are a number of things that we provide advocacy and support. And most importantly, those are the things that we do. We do provide a shelter, but that's the smallest percent of the services that we offer. Because when someone is sexually assaulted, whether that's an adult or a child, the entire family is affected and the entire world of that individual is put into upheaval. And they need somewhere to go that understands all of the complexities that exist and how that changes the dynamics, not only within a family unit, but within the way someone feels about how the world operates. When someone is sexually assaulted, the thing that we believe to be true, which is I have control over one thing, myself, and when someone is sexually assaulted, that control has been stolen. And it changes the entire dynamic of the way that victim views the world.
How many people can stay at your shelter and how full are you usually?
If we are full to capacity, we can house 40, and we are pretty full consistently all the time.
You had a major expansion a few years ago, so that apparently hasn't I imagine it's gone some ways toward alleviating the need, but not completely.
Not completely. That's part of what's difficult about when you expand a shelter facility is that the need still is there, and there's more need than we have the capacity to build. We could build an entire city of shelter, and we still might be turning people away. What we have to do is address the core issues of what's happening in our community so that we don't have to build shelters, so that we have everyone who is safe in our community and safe in their homes.
How dangerous is your line of work?
It can be pretty dangerous, frankly. What we're dealing with is people who believe they have power and control over other people, and that can put us at risk as well. Being advocates, we are working with people to try to stop the power and control and to try to get people to get their lives back on track, and that can be threatening to people who believe they're entitled to hurt someone.
It's got to take a special kind of person to work at the women's community to either be on your staff or be a volunteer.
I think they're in every profession. It takes a certain personality, and there are a lot of difficulties in what we deal with, and it's really hard work. And I've been doing this for 20 years, and people say, how do you do it? And I can tell you it's the most humbling experience that one can have, because if I can get up every day and go listen to the stories, the most horrific things that one human being does to another, and you think you've heard the worst thing, and the next day I hear something worse. But those people come and they share those stories, and they take the risk to say to someone, I need help, which is a hard thing to do, and to say, this is something I don't want anyone to know about, but I have to talk about it so I can heal. They give us that gift. They give us the gift, and I honor that gift. And that is what gets me through every day. If someone is strong enough to come forward and say, this happened to me, and I want to talk about it so it doesn't happen to someone else, that carries me through every day.
Paul Clark, you teach at the School of Public Safety at North Central Technical College. Tell us about that.
I'm involved in both our associate degree educational program and our law enforcement, basic law enforcement police academy. So at any given time, we have somewhere around 100 students in our program seeking careers in the criminal justice field, primarily working as jailers and road police officers.
Why did you want to participate in this program?
My career goes back a pretty long time now, there was a point where I was working as an administrator and was kind of seeking what is it that I have a real passion for, and it's seeing the men and women that at that time I was supervising get better at their jobs. And so there was an opportunity when the college here in Wausau was expanding to come on board. That was about 13 years ago now, and I haven't regretted it a day since.
Now, you were also a deputy police chief, a detective sergeant, and a patrol officer. You've got experience investigating sexual assaults. In fact, according to the information you sent me, your first case was 26 years ago. Do you still remember that?
I do. I was in field training and had no business investigating that case. It had come into our lobby as a domestic disturbance, and my field training officer left me in the interview room with our victim, and I assume he went off to get a cup of coffee or talk to the sergeant in the office or whatever. And I just sat down and said what happened, and it turned out that not only was there a physical assault the day the report was delivered to us, but there was a sexual assault the night before. So I just went about doing what I thought I was supposed to do. Our policy at that time was that we had one experienced female officer on the department, and she handled all sexual assaults. There was a thought process at the time that really only women could understand other women and that women would only open up to women. And I was just too new to really know that that was what was supposed to happen, that I was supposed to call somebody else in. So I just went through doing what I had been trained to do, which was to get complete details about what happened. And about 2 hours into the interview, there's a knock on the door, and my field training officer walked in and kind of gave me the, what are you doing in here look.
Yeah.
And I said, she said she got raped last night. And, you know, the color drained from his skin, and, we're supposed to have called somebody in.
How many of these cases have you investigated? It's got to be more than a handful.
Yeah, when I was with the Fond du Lac Police Department as a patrol officer, there were a few of them. But when I went to North Fond du Lac and was a detective, that was the bulk of my caseload. That was a significant problem we had, both in adult sexual assaults and juvenile sexual assaults.
Are there any commonalities between the cases, between what the perpetrator is like? What the perpetrator believes?
I think, as Jane said, that this is a crime, and I think this is one of the misconceptions. This is not a crime about passion, and I'm overwhelmed with, lust. It's a crime about taking power and control away from other people, and I think that's the real common thread that you see, that there's either an abuse of some sort of position, or it's a I'm going to dominate this other human being.
The men who commit these acts, do they think that what they're doing is wrong?
I've seen a mix of that in interviewing suspects, and I think there are some people who recognize a mistake, and whether they're truly remorseful or not, they're certainly emotional about what's happening to them in the minute. And I've come across some people who I think this is just the way they operate within the world. This is their normal.
Jane, where do people get the idea that it's all right to treat women like that? Are they brought up that way? Is it behavior that they've learned from their families? Is it passed down from generation to generation? Or do they learn it elsewhere? Do they pick it up from the society as a whole?
Well, I think there are a lot of places. And we certainly know people who have grown up in homes or who have know people who do this who choose otherwise. So when you choose to assault someone, that's always a choice. But what we find a lot in people trying to understand why this is happening, there are a lot of messages that we get from our culture that this is just the way things are and that it's not that big a deal. It starts real young. Bullying is part of this whole process that is a part of the continuum of abuse of power and control that's on it. And you get to the extreme end of sexual assault and rape. So any time that you touch someone without their consent, this is sexual assault. And we kind of minimize those things in our movies, in our culture, in our media, the way we portray things. When there are sexual assault cases that get a lot of hype and a lot of media, we see what it does to victims and we see how it supports perpetrators. And this is just something that we kind of make excuses for. I think part of that is we don't really understand or want to accept the fact that people will do this by intent. Human beings are incredibly forgiving creatures, and we rationalize things so that it can make sense in our mind. So when we see someone that we know or that we care about, because people who commit these crimes are people who we know and care about.
Right.
So when we see that, we rationalize the behavior so that it makes sense. And we've seen that play out in a number of ways. If we think even to the Brock Turner case, where he was convicted of sexually assaulting an unconscious woman, and the response was – from his father, 20 minutes of action, and he has a lifetime of problems now. Well, he created those problems for himself, but we minimize that behavior in saying, you know, this is just something, it wasn't that big a deal. And to that young woman, that was a really big deal.
Here's a definition that I read in the introduction. Rape culture is an environment in which rape is prevalent and in which sexual violence against women is normalized and excused in the media and popular culture. Do you buy that?
I see it all the time. Paul and I were talking earlier about you look so far as just our advertising. And part of the issue around all of this is we don't want to talk about sex as a culture. Sex is a really healthy, normal, exciting, intimate behavior between people who care about one another. And we don't want to talk about that. So we get really uncomfortable around this particular issue when we're talking about the means of control with sex as the weapon. So it gets really difficult for us to have these conversations. And we see in our advertising, we see in our media, we see in storylines in movies and in our television, there's rape is almost always a storyline. And that's something that is very concerning because it normalizes that this is something that happens. And it often turns into a very passionate exchange while the rape is happening or after the rape has occurred, which again is not the experience of victims of sexual assault, but it's the way it's portrayed that leaves us with a lot of dangerous situations.
Some have rejected the idea of rape culture. In 2014, Carolyn Kitchens wrote in Time magazine, under the headline, "It's Time to End the Rape Culture Hysteria." She wrote, "Tolerance for rape. Rape is a horrific crime, and rapists are despised. We have strict laws that Americans want to see enforced. Though rape is certainly a serious problem, there's no evidence that it is considered a cultural norm. 21st century America does not have a rape culture. What we have is an out-of-control lobby leading the public and our educational and political leaders down the wrong path." And she adds, "By blaming so-called rape culture, we implicate all men in a social atrocity, trivialize the experience of survivors, and deflect blame from the rapists truly responsible for sexual violence." What's your reaction to that?
My reaction is that no one has ever said that all men are sex offenders. That has never been said. When we talk about rape culture, we're not saying that all men do this. In fact, it's quite a small percentage of men that perpetuate these violent crimes. So that's something that in that particular statement, that's never been said. Again, the other thing that I think about that, rape culture is such a huge word and it's hard to wrap exactly what it is. So from her perspective and thinking that this might deflect things, it might, because we don't know how to package this in another way to say we have normalized sexually aggressive behavior and we don't – we want to say that we don't. We say that we don't like rape, but when we have high-profile cases of people who have committed rapes, what we see on a consistent basis is victims being blamed for their behavior, that this made it their fault, and minimizing and denying the behavior of sex offenders. And that's consistent across the board.
Paul Clark, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I think some of the issue there is when we have a case that becomes public – at a point where there is a discussion about, so what did the victim do? That's not a relevant conversation. And I think that's evidence that we aren't looking at this clearly from the right perspective. The conversation about the case that you mentioned, somewhat locally, if that turns to, well, why was this victim there and what were they doing? It's not about that. It's about the criminal action of the suspect, and that's what should be getting, not headline time, but that's what should be in the body of the conversation. You know, the media sells a product. It's a story, and so you have to have some completeness. But at the point where we're having lengthy conversations about whether or not somebody did something that contributed to it, that's not what we need to have the conversation about, and it's not what we're having the conversation about in other types of criminal actions.
Why is this different?
So if you had a car and it was stolen, we probably wouldn't be having a conversation about where you parked it or why'd you have such a nice car and, gee, that convertible gun.
Why was it red?
Yeah, you bought the kind of car that a lot of people liked. You know, it's the number one stolen car in America. Why were you driving that thing?
But yet we talk about women. Why were you dressed that way?
Exactly.
Why were you drinking alcohol?
And so when you have a difference in the way that one type of crime is talked about versus another type of crime – you have to say there's something there that's different.
Jane, how important are role models for young people in either perpetuating or helping to fight this culture? When powerful, successful people act like it's okay to subjugate or sexually assault women, is that a message that can influence young people's attitudes and behavior?
I think it is. Obviously, for some people more than others. Again, people get to make choices on how they respond to things and the actions that they take. But we all are getting messages all the time, and we choose what messages we take in. So when we have people in positions of authority and positions of power that do things that are contrary to what we believe should be happening, some people will use that as an excuse. Is it that they already had those intentions and this is just something they use? I don't know that we'll know that, but it certainly can be concerning. And when we have role models and we see people who do things that makes it appear okay, well, if that person can do it, then it's okay for me to do it, and they emulate that and think that that's the way to be, it's very concerning.
Isn't that the nature of celebrity endorsement? You know, if I own a company and spontaneously Oprah starts buying my stuff and talking about it, or, you know, my label is there in this shot, isn't that great for me and my company? Well, unfortunately, if you have a celebrity who, you know, writes a really popular rap song that has this, or a video game or something else, you wind up with, you know, that's that sort of no press is bad press kind of thing.
Let's talk about one particular powerful person. One of the much talked about things in our last election cycle was a videotape in which our new president, Donald Trump, bragged about sexually assaulting women. The tape was in line with earlier comments he had made on the Howard Stern show and in public venues, comments which became the subject of campaign ads by Hillary Clinton and which were also the focus of a Republican Party primary debate. Let's listen.
I've got to use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the...
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
I'd look her right in that fat, ugly face of hers. She's a slob.
She ate like a pig.
A person who's flat-chested is very hard to be a 10.
Does she have a good body? No. Does she have a fat? Absolutely.
Do you treat women with respect?
I can't say that either.
All right, go.
Mr. Trump, one of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account
only
is
Rosie
several...
O'Donnell.
No, it wasn't. Your Twitter account.
Thank you.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct. I've been challenged by so many people, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either.
That's Fox reporter Megyn Kelly questioning Donald Trump at a Republican primary debate, a campaign ad by Hillary Clinton, and comments that Trump made outside the Access Hollywood set in 2005 when he didn't know that his microphone was on. Jane Graham Jennings, are you okay with those comments?
I don't think any time, whoever it is, someone makes comments like that, that they're okay. So all of those things are very concerning. My bigger concern is that we turn issues of sexual violence political, and it's not political. This is not a political situation. This happens to anybody regardless of politics. And there's a concern I always have that when we get into a political arena, we suddenly stop the conversation that is important, which is no one has the right to touch you without your consent, no matter who they are. So that's the conversation we need to have, not about who said what or who is what or what side of the political aisle you're on. When we take that and make that the point, we can't get to the really important piece, which is no one can touch you without your consent, no matter who they are. And that's the message that needs to come out.
Trump is now the president-elect. He won despite massive media attention given to those remarks about women. A number of women even came out to say they had been the subject of unwanted advances. In the end, all of that meant nothing. He was elected. He was elected to the most powerful office in the world. And he is now a role model for children all across the country. He's the president-elect. Does that mean it's okay for kids in grade school or high school to talk that way about women or to sexually assault them?
Clearly, I don't think that's okay. But I think it's, you know, it's the same thing that we run into through the NFL. We have a number of people who are held up as role models that don't do things that are role model worthy. And we excuse that by saying, you know, we minimize those behaviors. And that's where the danger is. Because someone is famous, because someone is popular, because someone has power, we have to make sure we still hold them accountable to inappropriate actions, words, and behaviors. And we just aren't able to do that. We rationalize those things away so that we can support our own beliefs about something because we like that person.
Mr. Trump is not the only person in the public eye who's been criticized for his sexual behavior. Former President Bill Clinton has been accused of unwanted sexual advances and assaults by a number of women. He was impeached following an affair with a White House intern, Monica Lewinsky. So we've got two different clips of the former president, one when the subject first came to light and a second after he had to testify about it under oath.
But I want to say one thing to the American people.
I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
As you know, in a deposition in January, I was asked questions about my relationship with Monica Lewinsky. While my answers were legally accurate, I did not volunteer information. Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong. It constituted a critical lapse in judgment and a personal failure on my part for which I am solely and completely responsible. I know that my public comments and my silence about this matter gave a false impression. I misled people, including even my wife.
Again, what kind of a role model is this for our young people?
Again, I would say the same thing. When we have people who are doing things and make excuses for their behavior, I mean, certainly that was an abuse of power. When we have someone in a powerful position who minimizes that behavior, changes their story, lies about things, those are things that should be concerning to all of us. Again, it's not a political issue. This is a core issue to our culture and our society. Millions of people are sexually assaulted, and we need to take a stance and say none of this is okay for anyone.
Paul Clark, I'll let you weigh in on this.
Well, I think from the criminal justice system standpoint, if you compare those two and you kind of play them back to back, there is some distinction between the criminal elements of a sexual assault, the touching without consent, and the civil law issue of a workplace sexual harassment case. I think it's interesting in the Access Hollywood situation that while people were employees, that didn't seem to be taken very seriously by them as a potential sexual harassment issue if they had this tape. And there are differences in the way that those two things are handled from a systemic standpoint. My training –
From a legal standpoint,
right,
in the criminal justice system?
What I train people to do is when someone comes forward, first and foremost, whether it's eventually a criminal issue or a civil issue, the law enforcement response has to be, we believe you, we trust you, and we're going to help you with this issue. Sometimes at the end, you say, we're sorry that this horrible thing happened to you, but no crime was committed, and you may need to address this with HR or with an attorney. And in other cases, it's, okay, here's all the evidence we have, and we're going to move this case forward to the district attorney, and we're going to look for prosecution.
The subject on Route 51 today is rape culture and violence against women with Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community and Paul Clark of North Central Technical College's School of Public Safety. I'm Glenn Moberg. When we return, we're going to look at the messages being sent to our young people in our music and our popular culture. We're going to take a short break. Here's J.J. Essen with his song, The Door.
He wouldn't hurt you like that if he really loved you so bad. He wouldn't say the things he says if he really cared. So I won't let you go back, 'cause he's not all that you have. But you're my blood and I'll always be there. You'll never be alone.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
I decided to write an anthem for all women and victims all around the world against domestic violence and abuse. It's time to say no more.
That's Deshae Williams with her song No More, taking us into our next segment of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking about rape culture and violence against women with Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community of Wausau and Paul Clark of North Central Technical College's School of Public Safety. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That number again is 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. I'll read it live on the air. And if you do want to make a comment, you should probably call now because we've got wide open phone lines and usually things jam up toward the end of the program. Jane Graham Jennings and Paul Clark, we were listening to clips from Bill Clinton and President-elect Donald Trump immediately before the break. During immediately after that Access Hollywood tape, a number of women came forward accusing the president-elect of unwanted sexual advances. He called them all liars. Isn't that what people who sexually assault other people normally do?
I've worked with suspects for a long time, and lots of suspects deny things. I think there are some patterns that I've seen over the years with some of what I would consider celebrity cases. You know, when a victim is victimized, one of the big what we hear from them is anybody going to believe me? You know, that's a again, your car gets stolen, you immediately call the police, and you don't wonder whether or not the police are going to believe you that your car was stolen. We hear from sexual assault victims that there's a lot of concern over whether they're going to be believed, and I think that's amplified when the suspect is someone of standing.
Shouldn't a person be innocent until proven guilty?
That's our motto. Right. What we have to understand as essentially first responders in law enforcement is that when something happens to somebody and they open up, their actual physical well-being will be influenced by the attitude and demeanor of this person that they relate to. So as law enforcement officers, we have this tremendous responsibility that impacts the long-term health and recovery of the victim, and we have to take that seriously. So good investigative technique involves when someone comes to you, you take all the information you can possibly get about the case. You take everything at face value. Understand that someone who's traumatized is going to have some gaps in the story. The impact of trauma on the brain will create some sort of dead spots in memory. So you take all that information in. You believe everything you're told. You be very detailed about your work. And then once that person is ideally handed off to somebody from Jane's organization or whatever organization's mm-hmm. operative in that county, then you take all those details and you say, so what can be verified here? You know, what can I go look at? And, you know, okay, so they said they were at this location, this restaurant. You know, can I go verify that? They met with this person. Can I go talk to that person? And what do they have? They were supposed to be at this place. There may be physical evidence in the case. A hospital visit may be involved to have a sexual assault examination done. But we want to try and verify all those things. And then we go work with the suspect.
Jane, how frequently are women afraid to come forward because they don't think they're going to be believed? And how traumatizing is it to them when they aren't?
It's more frequent than not, and they're extremely traumatized. Not being believed is the biggest factor that hampers and halts someone's recovery. When someone first discloses that they've been sexually assaulted, the way that first person they respond changes the trajectory of how things go. For children even, when we are doing prevention education in schools, what we tell children is you keep telling until some adult listens. Because the natural response from most parents when their child discloses sexual abuse is, I don't believe it. Mostly because the people who are sexually abusing our children are people that we know and love. They are people who have endeared themselves into our families and into our circle of trust. And so when a child says, this person is hurting me, our natural inclination is denial because denial keeps us safe and it works very effectively. So they say, I don't believe you. And that's common. So we tell kids, keep talking until someone believes you. Our natural inclination is to not believe it happened. So when sexual assault victims come forward, they have seen the way cases have played out in the media. They've seen the way victims are treated across the country. They've seen all of that. They're anticipating that they won't be believed. And when they're not, it sends them into a spiral, a downward spiral that hopefully they can eventually recover from. But it takes much longer. Sexual assault is unfortunately quite common, but we don't want to talk about it, so we teach people not to. Silence enables perpetrators to keep doing it. When we're talking about the criminal justice system and those people who do report, when it gets reported, the most often things that we're going to be dealing with is a consent defense. Offenders are going to be saying, yes, we had sex, but it was consensual. Because now with DNA, the idea that it wasn't me has kind of gone out the window. We can prove that it was you. But then they say, yeah, it was me. It was consensual. And that's where it gets into the really tricky details that we have to get to figure out, was this consent or not? Again, this is an issue that's critical for us to understand. Consent is part of the conversation that needs to be had that we don't talk about. Because if you talk about consent, that means you have to talk about sex.
Right. Rape culture can be reinforced by many things, including popular music. Let's listen to some songs by some best-selling recording artists with lyrics that have questionable messages. And I only picked mainstream artists and mainstream songs. If I wanted to, I could fill up the entire radio show, obviously, with questionable lyrics. But you're going to hear in order Johnny Cash, The Beatles, The Rolling Stones, Jamie Foxx, and Robin Thicke.
Early one morning while making the rounds, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down. I went right home and I went to bed. I stuck at 11:44 beneath my head.
Robin Thicke, T.I., and Pharrell Williams with their 2013 hit Blurred Lines, which was banned in London. Before that, Jamie Foxx with Blame It on the Alcohol from 2008. Before that, going back to the 60s with Under My Thumb by the Rolling Stones, Run for Your Life by the Beatles, and Cocaine Blues by Johnny Cash. Jane Graham Jennings, very popular artist, sending some questionable messages.
Certainly, and I mean, that's just a small list of them. It's interesting, we brought a national speaker in who actually, for his presentations, uses lyrics of songs that are pretty popular to all of us. And, you know, I had a number of people coming up to me jokingly afterwards and saying, you have just ruined me to be able to listen to music. Can't I listen to anything without it being bad? And I just say, you know, we have to be careful about what we're listening to. And again, part of the reason why this is so dangerous is because we don't talk about sex in a healthy way. If we had counter messages to say all these things, if we could just, this is just some fun music and we're, you know, we're making light of it. But we don't have a counter message in any way. So that's why it's not light. That's why these things are concerning, and especially the blaming the alcohol. That's the number one facilitation of sexual assault in this state.
And that's a Jamie Foxx song. She knows what she wants. She don't want to seem like she's easy. Blame it on the alcohol. Those are the lyrics.
Right.
How often is alcohol and drugs something that is involved with rape or sexual assault situations, Paul Clark?
I think the last statistics I saw pegged it at 50 to 75%. It is more a factor in acquaintance sexual assaults, and it is more a factor for younger victims. So when we talk about alcohol policy and issues surrounding underage drinking, one of those things that has to be in that mix is, especially for younger, less experienced drinkers, it is more likely to be a factor. And if you were talking in a prevention mode, especially around college campuses, be careful with alcohol because it puts you in a high-risk group.
And the ads for alcohol are everywhere. You know, the light beer commercials, all showing young people apparently right on the edge of sexual encounters, and the alcohol is there to facilitate things.
Exactly. And Jay and I were talking earlier off the air, the view of who you see in those and this idea that we have a culture where sex is clearly something in our mind. It's a primary driving force in advertising. Unfortunately, Glenn, you and I aren't going to be featured in any beer ads anytime soon unless, we get the job where we're testing of the big copper kegs. Maybe by comparison we'll look small. But the idea that it is so much a part of what drives sales in this country, yet we're really uncomfortable talking about it, prohibited from talking about sex, in the workplace. And that creates the situation where you have a victim who's uncomfortable talking about this very personal thing that happened to him. You have a police officer who's not particular. I'm much more comfortable talking to somebody about their car getting stolen.
Right.
I'm not a big car guy, but I'm happy to talk about cars. I find no stress talking about cars. I'm sorry your car got stolen. Wow, it sounds like it was really nice. But now you take that patrol officer and you say, okay, this thing that throughout your life you've been taught not to talk about at the kitchen table or really anywhere else. You've got to talk about it. And you've got to talk about it with a stranger in pretty excruciating detail. And you create this environment that's really uncomfortable. This is not necessarily anybody's fault, but it is a challenge for investigating these crimes within our culture.
You were mentioning television commercials. What about the Hardee's commercials where you have women in bikinis washing cars while eating grotesquely large hamburgers? Andrew Puzdar, who is the CEO of Hardee's, he is now Donald Trump's choice to head the Department of Labor. And he said, quote, "There's nothing more American than a beautiful woman in a bikini eating a burger and being in a hot tub. There's nothing more American."
I don't know how to comment.
The silence is deafening, isn't it? And this has been going on a long time. My parents had a 78 RPM record by a pretty mainstream group called the Ames Brothers. It came out in the early 50s. I used to listen to it a lot as a kid. Piano Roll Blues was on one side. The flip side was a song called Why Do They Always Say No? Here are the lyrics. "Whenever they say no, it means go right ahead because it's 10 to 1 that they mean yes instead. So why do they always say no when you know they mean yes all the time?"
And those are exactly the messages that we're concerned about. We are telling people that don't listen when someone says no, do it anyway. And that is a real problem. People say no means no. We don't listen to that anyway. So let's change it and say this. Yes means yes. Everything else is no.
We've got to take another quick break. We've gone way over in this segment. The subject on Route 51 today is rape culture and violence against women with Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community and Paul Clark of North Central Technical College's School of Public Safety. I'm Glenn Moberg. Here's Ryan Daniels with his song, Lies and Bruises.
So now I beg you, you gotta run, please don't stay. Find those people who are strong enough to help you get away. So I pray you can see how everybody loses when someone confuses love with lies and bruises.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Medical Society, dedicated to helping physicians lead efforts to optimize healthcare delivery and ensure accessible, efficient, patient-centered care for all the people of Wisconsin. Information at wisconsinmedicalsociety.org. Support also comes from the Lucille Tack Center for the Arts in Spencer, presenting Cloud Cult, January 14th. This eclectic Minnesota band includes vocals, a cellist, a violinist, and a painter. Tickets are at LucilleTackCenter.com.
First I was afraid, I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong, and I learned how to get along. And so you're back.
Gloria Gaynor taking us into our final segment of Route 51. We're talking about rape culture today, with Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community and Paul Clark, who teaches at North Central Technical College's School of Public Safety. Nancy on Facebook says, quote, I cannot say enough about the good that Jane has done. While so many burn out, she remains a star of hope for so many. She tirelessly educates our community. Jane Graham Jennings.
Well, thank you, Nancy, for those comments. And all I can say is I do the best I can, and my inspiration is all the people who are willing to share their stories with me and provide hope for others. If they can survive the things that they endure, I can certainly stand up and speak when they're unable.
Women who have been abused, is it true that they're often most at risk when they've gone to your shelter and taken steps to leave their abuser?
In domestic violence, yes. The most dangerous time for someone is when they have decided to leave or after they have left, because the tie of control has been broken and the person who is hurting them and wants to control them is saying, I will control you and you can't leave me. So that's one of the reasons when people say just leave. It's not that simple. It's very complex, and leaving doesn't guarantee safety.
What do you tell them as they attempt to leave an abusive situation?
We do individual safety planning depending on the person and what their situation is, and it's different for everybody. But we also enforce to them that this could be a really dangerous time. And so we talk about safety planning. We talk about where they can go. We talk about things that they're going to need. And we hope that and encourage them to make sure they utilize law enforcement if it gets really dangerous.
And Paul Clark, law enforcement usually gets into these situations after something has happened. What do you do to prevent something from happening before it does?
Well, that's really the challenge for us, is that we're not by nature as much a proactive entity as we are a reactive entity. So if someone came to a police department and said, this is happening to me, our first push is going to be, say, have there been some crimes occurred, so that we can get those investigated and we get that prosecution started. One of the things about Wisconsin's domestic abuse law is for 72 hours following a domestic abuse arrest, the suspect is prohibited from contacting the victim in any way. That's a really small window of opportunity to pack up your life and try to move out and move on. It's also, from a constitutional standpoint, a pretty big bar on the accused, and you mentioned earlier, innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
This is a 72-hour no contact, really based on law enforcement say-so. So it's a pretty significant police power, but it gives at least a gap. It's really important for us to be working with, you know, here in Marathon County, the women's community, so that we can get that their resources combined with our resources. That's why it – that's when it works the best.
Jane Graham Jennings, we are out of time. Do you have any final thoughts?
The most important thing I just want to make sure everyone understands, you are not alone if you have been assaulted. It is not your fault, and there are people who are there to help you. In every county in Wisconsin, there are services available to you who will listen to you and help you recover.
Well, thank you so much, all of you, for being with us today. And Jane, especially, thank you for helping us out with this and with the with all of the work that you've done with the women's community. It's something that it's certainly something that we need more of.
Thank you.
We want to thank today's guests, Jane Graham Jennings, Executive Director of the Women's Community of Wausau, and Paul Clark, who teaches at North Central Technical College's School of Public Safety. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Deshae Williams, Lady Gaga, J.J. Essen, Johnny Cash, The Beatles, The Rolling Stones, Jamie Foxx, Robin Thicke, Ryan Daniels, Gloria Gaynor, and Aretha Franklin. Next week on Route 51, we look at an ambitious new effort in central Wisconsin to bridge the cultural and racial divide called Toward One Wausau. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.